This is Commerce Shenanigans, episode 1025, Book of the Month Club, Pedro and Me. Hey, no stopping them shenanigans, no getting into shenanigans, all up in them shenanigans, Welcome to the Comic Shenanigans Podcast. This is episode 1025. It's our Book of the Month Club for January 2024. This time we're reading Pedro and Me. I'm your host, Adam Chapman, and I'm joined by my lovely co-host,
Kelly Chapman.
So thank you so much for stepping in for the Book of the Month Club. This was actually a reschedule because our original plan for the Book of the Month Club got pushed off, and Kelly was pressed into service, and we read Pedro and Me.
I think you should have called me the special, special, special guest.
Oh.
Because I stepped in due to a scheduling conflict.
You did.
With short notice.
Yeah, you did.
And was given homework.
Yeah.
Normally, it's like, hey, let's podcast. This is what we're going to talk about. This was like, here's a book. Read it.
Yeah.
Tell me what you think.
You had some options. There's a couple options.
Yeah, I don't know why you picked weird options. I'm not going to lie.
I put It's Jeff in front of you, and I thought, well, that's like a fun light comic about
I feel like you were like shark. Here you're like a child, I'll give you this kid's comic book.
No,
that's what it felt like.
Okay, well, fair.
But I just need you to understand that you gave me like basically what looked like, and I didn't read it, a child's comic book for like a super serious, like,
yeah,
end of the world, like everything is awful, like,
yeah,
grown-up story.
Yeah, they're very different. There's no.
Yeah.
You were funny because you were like, I thought I was getting like a Spider-Man Blue or something.
I thought I was getting like.
Love?
Yeah. Or like Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane.
Yeah.
That's fair. I haven't read that in years.
It has been years, yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Okay, well.
So instead.
Maybe if I have to step in again, you'll do better.
Yes, okay. So, we didn't read the children's comic. I will say, it's delightful for all ages.
That's fine.
I have many times talked to the creator of the comic, and she loves writing the stories for this character.
So, you know what I think it is? There's that show that Olivia watches called Shark Dog.
Oh. Yeah.
And we watched it recently,
yeah,
and she watched, like, the same episode twice. So, like, even though the show, like, I'm not saying it's not a good show, but I was like, ugh, Shark Dog. I didn't want to read Shark Dog, and I know that it's not Shark Dog, but like in my mind, it was Shark Dog.
I mean, they treat him like a dog.
Yeah, so basically, someone ripped off someone else because Shark Dog seems like it's Jeff.
Okay, fair enough.
Maybe someone should look into that.
So we read Pedro and Me by Judd, yes, Winnick,
friend of the podcast,
very great friend of the podcast. He's done the show many times in the past, so this is one of his first big kind of breakthrough things in the comic industry. Doing this graphic novel before he kind of parlayed it into being a comic book writer at Marvel and DC, and then eventually being the cartoonist behind the book series, the successful book series Hilo, which has 10th book comes out, I think, late next month. But this is very early on in his career, in doing this autobiographical tale of, you know, being on the real world San Francisco, which I never watched because I was far too young for that at the time. What?
I know, it's just, you're an old man at heart.
Well,
you're like, oh, I was far too young for this.
I mean, my physical age was too young, and my mental age was,
yeah,
probably
maybe
too
not
old.
A show for 10-year-olds.
No, especially at the time. And like, I don't think we had MTV, like.
So I was thinking that actually, when I was reading this, I don't know where I was going with that.
Okay.
I was thinking, I don't know when we had MTV or if we had MTV. I don't know that we could have watched The Real World. Like, I don't know when. I'm sure they aired in Canada.
Well, maybe not.
They did. Like, maybe we should look into this. I'm not going to right now.
Yeah.
If only we had a device that could tell us all the answers to the world's questions. No, don't bother.
Okay.
I just don't think the early seasons may not have aired in Canada, or if they did, they may not have been as easily accessible.
Yeah,
I didn't have MTV.
I don't know what
MTV was.
I don't even know what year MTV Canada became a thing. I remember when we started watching some stuff on MTV Canada in like late 2000s, I was still like, this is MTV? Like, I was just, it seemed so quaint to me because we had much music.
Late 2000s?
Yeah.
Like, you're saying, like, 2007, 2008. Like, late to...
2008, 9.
Okay, because to me, like, late 2000s, like, we're talking, like, things that haven't happened yet. Like, in the year 2090.
Oh.
In the late 2000s.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah.
I mean, like, in the late aughts.
You were going to say that.
Does that feel, make you feel better?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I would be interested later to see, like, if we could maybe take a look and see when it would have been accessible to us. But yeah, I don't even think we... Maybe it was a thing in Canada, but I don't think I had that channel.
I definitely knew of it.
I'm not sure we could have watched it.
I knew of it from the cultural zeitgeist, but I don't know at what point I became aware of it. Like, it probably wasn't...
You would have been, what, 10?
Yeah.
On his season?
Yeah. 10 or 11 was, what, 94, I think it was?
Yeah, okay, so...
So I was pretty young. So I again, at some point, the idea, the cultural kind of cachet of saying, like, what the real world was, I remember seeing it pastiched in, like, Family Guy and, like, Simpsons. And right. They all had, like, a version of that. So that would have been recognizable to me, but I wouldn't have understood the core kind of what that was.
Right. So we sort of just jumped right into that. But so for anyone who hasn't read this book, which could be a lot of our listeners, because it's not sort of the typical stuff that you talk about on your show.
No. And it's not recent either. Like,
It's 2000, I think we said the copyright was that I looked it up.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so basically, as Adam was just alluding to, the writer, the cartoonist behind this?
Yeah.
He's the writer and illustrator. Did you just say cartoonist?
I would say cartoonist.
Okay.
I mean, he would call himself a cartoonist. I think it describes him as a cartoonist, so okay. I go by
So
it.
The cartoonist behind the book was on the cast of The Real World San Francisco, which was season 3 of that show. Mm-hmm. And this story is about his experience, but specifically dealing with his friend Pedro, who became a very important part of his life. So that's why we're talking about The Real World. So... Mm-hmm. It sounds like from the book, like, he was quite famous, right? Mm. Being on this TV show, like,
yeah.
So people knew who he was. I didn't know who he was until you put this book in front of me. I mean, I knew who Judd Winnick was because you've talked about him. Zach's talked about him. Yeah. You know, we in this house read his books.
Mm-hmm.
But I...
Him as a personality.
You had mentioned that he had been on The Real World, because I my connection to The Real World is different in that I don't think I've ever watched an episode of The Real World like okay. You I've seen it in, like, you know, She's All That and, like,
mm-hmm. You know,
parodied and stuff,
yeah.
But I know it because I watched The Challenge. I love The Challenge. And a good amount of the cast came from that show. One, you know, their first shows were typically a season of The Real World. So a lot of my favorite reality stars, if that's a thing, had a season of The Real World that they were on that I haven't seen. So the most of The Real World I had seen is, you know, when they're on The Challenge, and sometimes they flash back to, like, mm-hmm. their origins on The Real World. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because my friend that likes the show, that watches it, you know, we talk about it. I'll say, oh, I love this person. And she'll, yeah, but did you see his original Real World season? And I'm like, no, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
She'll be like, he's an a-hole, or he was awful. You know, we love him now, but 20 years ago in insert city, like, he was mm-hmm. awful.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really interesting. I always think, oh, when I have time and I have nothing else to watch, maybe I'll watch some of these seasons.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll, do you think we can find San Francisco?
I don't know. I mean, it was important at the time, but I don't know if it's easily accessible, or I'd have to look into it.
Yeah, maybe let's do that.
It'd be interesting.
Anyway, yeah. It was an interesting choice for a book.
Okay. For me to choose it? Or
for you to choose it.
Okay.
No, not for him to write it. That's a weird thing to say.
It is.
It's an interesting choice for, like, a book of the month thing, because it's, first of all, it's a very serious topic. So essentially it's a story of him and his friend who was living with AIDS on the show,
mm-hmm.
In front of the world. Yeah. And he was also a
early 90s, so very different at the
time. Well-known educator. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, as a gay man, that alone.
Mm-hmm.
So
very serious,
very,
stuff.
Very serious topic. And spoiler, he ends up dying from AIDS. Mm-hmm. Well, from, I guess, a complication or infection that he contracted, but it's a very serious topic. So I did not end up with a fun, lighthearted book about a shark.
No, you did not. Which I did put in front of you.
Yeah.
Next time. Well, I'm curious. So, I mean, you read through it, you know, it was like one sitting for the most part.
Yeah.
I found when I first read it, I couldn't put it down. Like, I found it was very magnetic, very easy storytelling style that Judd employed. Obviously, very serious stuff and very emotional. It was very nakedly emotional. It wasn't trying to, you know, kind of cover up its emotional, you know, tenets. But, and the art was really captured, you know, the emotion of the moment, etc. And there's a lot of fun stuff in there, too. It's not all serious, but a lot of it is.
Yeah. I did, this is unrelated to anything, I did want more of his wife. Mm. Obviously, the book is called Pedro and Me. Yes. Actually, you didn't read the full title. It's called Pedro and Me,
oh, yes.
Friendship, Loss, and What I Learned.
True.
That's important.
Yes, it is.
Star Trek Into Darkness. Okay. You have to read the full title.
Yes, you do.
So I had known from you having him on the podcast that he ended up marrying one of his castmates from the show. True. And they do, you know, she's in the book, but, you know, I love love. So I wanted a little more of her story. Obviously, that's not the focus of the book, but it was nice to have a little happiness in there. Actually, not just their love story, but Pedro has a romantic interest and that has a, he ends up getting married to, or they said commitment ceremony.
Yeah. So at the time that
it wasn't
legal.
Okay. So
as close as they could have gotten.
Yeah. Anyway, it was great to have two sort of love stories in the book as well, because I knew going into it, obviously from the title, that it was going to, that he was going to pass away. I didn't realize, like, you know, the book is dedicated to his friend. It's very clearly about someone he's lost. I didn't realize how quickly he was going to lose him.
Mm.
You know, they did the show. They were, I don't know if they were both 22. Pedro was 22.
Yeah.
Judd, I think, was the same, if not same-ish. Very close.
Yeah.
And, you know, he passed away a few months after the show was filmed. Mm-hmm. Very, very quickly. Which even when you said the story, this is what this is about, I didn't realize we were going to have such a
it is interesting, right? Because
quick tragic loss.
We watch reality shows sometimes. We watch like Survivor and that kind of stuff. And it's the way it's edited. You do forget, like, if you spent all day with someone 24/7, like, you're going to, these bonds are going to be really fast. And that,
oh, 100%.
And you see that here, right? Like, it's definitely like,
yeah, they're, I mean, being filmed. My reality show stripes are showing. Mm-hmm. You know, when Rob and Amber fell in love on Survivor,
yeah,
I believed it because they were spending 24 hours a day together. Mm-hmm. When people have Big Brother showmances and they're like, I never thought I'd feel this strongly. It's because you don't normally, that's not how you have a relationship. So no. The same is true, like, with a couple as with, a, you know, they actually roomed together. Mm-hmm. They were roommates within the house.
That's right.
I can't imagine living together. You know, you do form very strong bonds. And they weren't together 24 hours. They did other things, but you know what I mean?
It's
still a very different environment.
For sure.
And you're bonding over the shared experience of having your life
filmed. And it's not like a normal thing yet. Because nowadays, I feel like people go into it much differently. Like, at the time, this would have been very, like, you know, it's only the third season. Reality television is in its nascent form. Like, it's not what it is now. Everyone kind of knows it. Plus, everyone is taking pictures of themselves and selfies and stuff. Like, that whole idea of filming everything is very different, whereas at the time it would have felt very foreign, which Judd does, you know, express as well. What strikes me reading it now is that, you know, it's 30 years later. So some of the cultural things are so different, and it's fascinating. Like, the idea that they're like, okay, are you going to be okay with, like, someone in the house is going to have AIDS? Like, are you cool with that? Like, that's like a really big, because this is the scary time, because people didn't really know a lot and there was a lot of misinformation. And so, you know, there was a lot of poorly formed opinions. So the fact that they would, like, constantly have to ask and be like vetting and be like, are you okay? And the fact that, like, they put them in this house and everyone's like, well, who's the one? Like, it's fascinating that they did it, but also it just kind of shows how far we've come as well.
As a society, I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I was thinking about it because I was like, you know, one of the biggest, you know, the goal of Pedro in the house was to keep spreading his message. He was already an educator. He spoke at schools and colleges and churches and all over the place. He was educating people because the information wasn't out there. People didn't know how you got it, how you avoided getting it, how, you know, was it safe to hang out with someone who had it, that kind of stuff. And I remember, I lost my train of thought there for a second, but there's in the acknowledgement, the foreword by Judd, he talks about, you know, if Pedro could see, and it's not recent. It's a few years after the book came out, so it's still, you know, 20 years ago or whatever.
Yeah.
15 years or whatever. You know, if Pedro were still alive, he would see that, you know, how far we've come, but also how much work we have and mm-hmm. how abstinence is still being taught in schools as the method to protect yourself. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's still not the level of sex education that there needs to be for people to be able to protect themselves, because he, you know, mm-hmm. Pedro ended up with AIDS at 17 years old, yeah. which is crazy.
Yeah.
And he didn't know. Nobody had taught him how to protect himself, how to stay safe, all that stuff. And so that made me think about, you know, the kind of sex education or, you know, that kind of education that we did or didn't have in school here when we were younger. Mm. I don't remember having an assembly, talking about it. No. You know, it was on TV. I remember very clearly the episode of Beverly Hills 90210 when they're teaching abstinence and the kids are trying to get them to realize that that's not the only way. Mm-hmm. And Donna Martin makes her big speech and she says, if you have a pool in your backyard, you can tell your kids to stay away from it. You can build a fence around it. But if you think there's any chance they're going to get into that pool, don't you think you'd better teach those kids how to swim? And it was like I remember, like, this was a moment in society.
Yeah.
But this was TV educating us. I'm not sure I was educated.
No.
I don't think anyone ever sat me down and told me these things.
It's interesting, too, right? You don't really hear about AIDS anymore. Does anyone ever talk about it? It's just
I mean, I watch a lot of Grey's Anatomy. So, like, yes.
Okay.
But in my day-to-day life, I'm not sure.
Like it was, like, an epidemic. Like, that's what we were treated, right? Like, the scary thing that was happening. And you started seeing, as you said, like, it was used in TV shows. You saw it in movies. But it was the scary version. And, again, this was what...
Yeah. But Pedro even that, like, by the time we were watching those types of shows, they were talking about all sexually transmitted diseases. Mm. It wasn't AIDS-specific.
True. You watch movies like Philadelphia, though, or...
Yeah, but I didn't.
I mean, I wasn't at 11, but...
No, but yeah, you're right. They had movies that were specifically that dealt with the topic. But I guess it's less talked about now?
I would...
Because it's not as much of an epidemic?
I guess. I honestly, even saying it, I'm like, I don't know the answer to that. I don't... I feel like I don't hear about it, but that doesn't mean anything. Just because I don't hear about it doesn't mean it's not a thing. But like,
obviously, probably it's still be hearing about it more because obviously it's still
there, it's still out there. But yeah, it's not well. And I guess that maybe that's just a sign of the media culture. Like, they move on to the next thing, the bigger, scarier thing you with.
Fair.
Perhaps
after the last few years we've had.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Yeah. No, it's I found it an incredibly moving story. Again, it's an extremely intimate portrayal of, you know, this friendship and what this person was and what it meant to him and to other people. He mentions, you know, Bill Clinton saying that this was like someone that they watched and could empathize with. And it wasn't, again, a scary dramatization on TV, but it was a real person.
Right.
And that it humanized the AIDS epidemic for people who would not have otherwise been able to understand it or know, because they didn't know anyone. And now that people felt like they knew someone who had AIDS, and that is a really interesting perspective to take, that, you know, how else do you create awareness but, you know, talk about it and have someone prominently on TV? And again, this is during, you start to see the destruction of the monoculture at around this time, where it used to be like 3 or 4 channels and that was it. And so everyone kind of had shared experiences. So even MTV had a very large viewership because, again, it wasn't totally fragmented yet. So the amount of people watching it probably dwarfs what people watch on cable networks now, or like major networks. So there was just probably a lot of people watching and, you know, following this story. So I saw you tear up at least.
What? I don't know what you're talking about.
And it's interesting. So, like, did you like it overall? Obviously, it's a rough read at times, and it's emotional and it's sad. Did you enjoy the read?
I did. Yes. Yes, very much.
It was effective. You thought it
was maybe not how I would have normally wanted to spend my Saturday nights.
Nope.
Plus, you know, our 4-year-old was kind of running around.
She was.
While I was trying to read it.
You're reading about life and death and like very serious stuff and AIDS, and your daughter's like, look at me.
Yeah. You said you couldn't put it down. I knew I couldn't put it down because you know, we had a time frame and we were trying to record. We didn't end up recording last night when I read it, but that was the plan and I was trying to stick to that. So I think the same would be true if I didn't have a timeline. I don't think I would have been able to put it down. It was very good. I was eager to see what happened. I was reading it knowing that it was going to be sad, so I was already like waiting for it. And actually, when you walked in and I had teared up, it was the Bill Clinton moment for some reason.
Oh, really?
I'm not sure exactly why that got to me. I think it was just very emotional, like that he gets this call from the president, and at that point he wasn't really able to speak very well, and so he couldn't really, you know, it wasn't that much of a two-way conversation. And then sort of what led from that with Clinton and some other people helping to get his family over, because he hadn't been able to see his family since they left Cuba. And so having the family reunited through that as well, so that they were able to, you know, reunite and spend some time with him before he passed. That was all just really emotional for me.
That type of stuff is interesting too, because the political climate is so different now that like you can't... the emotional impact of someone like Bill Clinton because of what he meant at the time as a president, like he was the younger president, right? He wasn't, he didn't feel like the stodgy old president of, you know, George H.W. Bush or Reagan. He felt younger and more youthful, right? So he was like the young president. It's kind of like what Obama was later, you know, this younger, hipper president. So the fact that, you know, he played a part is, you know, we don't have that anymore. You don't see Biden doing that, or you can't imagine Biden doing that. Definitely don't see Trump doing
that. Biden doesn't watch MTV, and that's not like a diss. I'm just saying, like, I don't.
No, probably not.
Although, is there still on MTV?
Yeah, it still exists.
Sorry. Yeah, no, obviously
not in the form.
I watched the challenge on MTV.
Exactly. Not in the
I watch
form
it on the CTV app because we're in Canada, and it's like it's a whole thing. But
yeah,
no, that was the part that made me tear up, and then it kind of just like linger until the end of the book, but
for sure,
definitely very emotional. I thought he did a really, really good job of telling the story. I think it's interesting too, because, you know, even if you hadn't figured out from the title and the dedication and that this was a book about his friend who died, like you very clearly know from the very beginning of the book that this man is going to die. And even, you know, the copy that we have, like I said, it has an acknowledgement. The book's from 2000, the acknowledgement's from 2008. But it actually, it does give the time frame of when he died. And so I said, I didn't realize it was going to be that quickly after the show was filmed. But in the acknowledgement, it does say, I don't have it in front of me, but, you know, 3 months after we finished filming or 4 months, like it does come right out and tell you the end of the book. So I think it's a skill. I think it says a lot about his how well he was able to tell the story, even knowing what the ending was going to be. Do you know what I mean? Like, because when you already know what, you know, for lack of, I can't think of an example, but we all knew Titanic was going to sink.
I knew that was going to be a reference.
I know, but why is that the only thing I could think of?
Because that's a, well,
because I'm basic. No. But like, that's like a big tragedy. You know it's coming.
Yeah, you go into that knowing exactly what the ending is.
Yeah. So I think
it's how you get
it's great storytelling that he was able to take the story that I kind of knew the ending to. And I'm assuming a lot of people who read this not only knew the ending, but knew the characters, because like I said, we didn't watch the show.
Yeah, they're real life personalities.
But like people already knew these personalities. They knew what was going to happen, but I think the story is still captivating and will keep you reading and interested. Because it's like you said, it's very personal, it's intimate, and it feels like a friend telling me a story. That's what it feels like.
Yeah.
Like I felt, I don't know Judd.
No.
But it felt like he was telling me his story. Like, I got that, you know, sit down, I'm going to tell you about my friend. Like, it felt very personal.
It's very conversational.
Yeah.
Very open. And he's very self-deprecating in general. And so, like, at the beginning, too, like, when he's kind of explaining, like, who he was and his upbringing, et cetera. Like, it's very, it's interesting. He mentions his friend Brad. His friend Brad would end up being he's a well-known novelist. But he's also the creator of those I Am books, like I Am Walt Disney, I Am...
So we have some of those.
Yeah, so we have a bunch of those. So that's who that Brad was. And he also ended up being a comic book writer as well, and had some very famous books he wrote in the mid-2000s especially. But he's a novelist, and he writes these amazing children's books.
You gotta read one of his books.
Yeah.
The next time your regular guest can't do Book of the Month, I'll slide in there.
Right? But yeah, so that it's always interesting to me, because you see him mentioned, but in passing, like,
yeah,
you know, his buddy Brad, his roommate Brad from university or college, right? So, yeah, no, I I thought it was, I think the first time I read it was probably when I was going to talk to Judd for the first time.
Oh, okay.
Because I'd followed his comic book work, but I'd always seen it in most descriptions of him. It always kind of said in parentheses, Pedro and me, but I'd never actually read it before. So this would probably have been about 6-7 years ago. And then I read it. And I have very clear memories of reading it on like the commute home. And like, again, I couldn't put it down.
I would read that on the subway? That's a bad plan.
I was waiting for a bus at like West Station, and I'm just like reading it, and I was like, I can't put it down. Like, it's really, again, it's a really captivating story.
Bad idea.
Yeah.
Like, when I used to watch Grey's Anatomy at the gym because I didn't have cable. So I was like, well, if you want to see Grey's, you better go get on a treadmill.
Yeah.
And I'd be like almost crying, like, it feels like a bad idea, is all I'm saying. But no, I'm glad you chose it. It was a very good read. It was sad. Like, it was kind of like, you know, bummed out.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think there's enough good in it that I do think that I wasn't left in despair. Like, there was still hope.
Yeah. You know? I guess that's the message of, that he would say the message of Pedro was the hope in the sadness.
Yeah.
Like, there's...
Well, and then they were talking about him and Pam, you know, when they would do their DR. I don't think they called it that. Like, their diary room, their one-on-ones, whatever they called it.
Yeah.
Jersey Shore calls it the DR, I think.
Oh, really?
I don't know.
The confessional? I don't know what it's called. But...
So when they do their, like, one-on-ones, they would be... If they were asked, like, how's Pedro feeling? How's he doing? They were lying. They were covering up how sick he actually was.
Mm.
Because they understood that it was important for him to appear, you know, like a regular guy.
Mm-hmm.
That his message was the important part. And so they were helping him cover the fact that he was getting sicker. Which is sad, but also, you know, it's interesting that they had this sort of what became a shared mission of spreading awareness, of continuing. And I love, love, love. I didn't know this. Obviously, I didn't know much, but I didn't know that after Pedro died, Judd continued on and did the lectures that Pedro was supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Which is crazy.
Heart-wrenching.
Can you imagine being in
amazing.
Being in your early 20s and doing all that? Like, that's like, we're, you know, 40 now, but like, this is. I know.
Late 30s is what you meant to say.
But you know, all the stuff he's done here, this is all him is in his early 20s. Like, like, that's really mind-blowing. And the maturity that comes out, especially with Pedro, but even with Judd, as you said, kind of, you know, taking up the mantle of that mission and doing what was important to his friend and what his friend would have done if he had survived, is really something. Like, that's a very mature... way of handling a horrific situation, and I don't know if I could have done that at, you know, my early 20s.
I'm not sure I could do it now.
Right? Like, it is quite something. There is a, I'm not going to call it a recurring character, but I think near the beginning of the book and then later on the end, there's the limo driver.
Yeah, the shuttle guy.
Yeah, the shuttle guy, yeah.
Yeah, he starts the book and he ends the book. I thought it was a brilliant way to tie it in.
It was really...
I mean, it's kind of random that, like, he ended up...
Yeah.
Recognizing him and seeing him again later, but you know, the book starts with him on his way to visit Pedro in the hospital, and the shuttle limo driver, whatever you want to call it, that picks him up, and then he ends up seeing him later after Pedro has died, and he's coming home from the lectures, I think, a business trip, and he remembered, the guy remembers him. And he recognizes him from TV, and he says some nice things about Pedro. And the little story of the guy at the airport that runs into him and says, you know, that... I mean, it's an example of how many people recognized Judd and would come up and tell them what he meant to them or what Pedro meant to them. Yeah. And specifically, it was a guy who, you know, found the courage in seeing Pedro to come out to his parents.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, you know, also became an educator and was traveling around telling his story and... You know, I do think we should see this season because this sounds, obviously it sounds good.
Sounds interesting.
But also, you know, I'm interested to see Pedro depicted on TV. It'll be different now because we obviously have way more gay people on TV and it's more normative. And they talk about not only was he a gay man living with AIDS, but he was in an interracial relationship and, you know, all of this stuff. So... I can't imagine that from 1994, but...
Well, that's why I was on MTV, right? Like, that would never have been on a major network. But now it could be on a major network,
for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, because as you said, it's more normative, but at the time, not at all. No. Like, I'm almost surprised it was on the air at all. But again, it's not a surprise, I guess, that it was, you know, MTV. It wasn't one of the major networks. It was a cable network, so they could probably have gotten away with more things.
Right.
I say gotten away like they did something wrong, but like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just something...
No, that, but they could push the envelope. Like, obviously not everyone is as open-minded, you know. Yeah. So, you're right. It would have been a risk to do it on, like, a mainstream cable network, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
At the time. Now, I think
you could. Yeah, it would be... I mean, if you think about, like, how many shows have we watched in the last 20 years that have gay characters, and I don't know if they necessarily have AIDS, but again, that feels like that part of the storyline is not talked about. As you said, it's almost like it's buried. Not intentionally, but I just feel like it's not in the conversation in the same way. It's interesting.
Maybe because we have bigger problems in the world?
I mean, well, that sounds... I don't know.
Maybe. No, I didn't mean it like that. I just mean... It's going to sound like I'm obsessed with Grey's Anatomy, because that's apparently... I've just been binging it lately.
Yeah.
But especially in the last couple years of that show, I don't mean bigger problems, but they obviously dealt with the COVID epidemic, and they dealt with...
What?
Oh, I drew a blank on the guy's name, but the Black Lives Matter...
Oh, yeah.
I can't...
Floyd?
Yes, thank you.
George Floyd?
Yes, thank you. You know, and then they're dealing with the abortion... bands, and so like there's been some very on topic current events, social issues on the show recently, and so I don't mean bigger problems, like it's not a problem, but it's not the current issue.
Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, Judd stayed in San Francisco, like he still lives in San Francisco now, you know. Like, Judd obviously didn't grow up in San Francisco. He moved to San Francisco for the show, and they're still there, him and Pam, so.
Well, so, completely unrelated, but I was thinking that because when they do these shows, they all live in a house together, but they do have jobs. Like, they go out and, you know, this person's a waitress, or this person, like, they live life. They're not, you know, Big Brother, they don't leave the house, and Survivor, they're on an island, and even Jersey Shore, they all worked at the t-shirt shop, but...
Yeah, it was less of, like, a real job in the same way. Yeah,
like, they all have real jobs.
Yeah.
So when I was... In the beginning in the book, when he was introducing the characters and stuff, well, not really characters, but his friends, and he was saying Pam was in medical school, I was thinking, that's so interesting to me, because did she transfer from another school?
Oh, like, interesting.
Because it's not like...
Yeah.
Hey, I work at a coffee shop. I'll just work at a different coffee shop. Like, if you're in med school, that's pretty huge.
Maybe she was already local?
So either she... Well, that's what I was wondering, because when you said they ended up staying there, either she was already local. I don't know if it says where she's from. I'm sure we could look it up. Or once she was established there, it didn't make sense to leave again.
Yeah.
Right? Because I'm sure if she did have to transfer schools in the middle of medical school, then to transfer again would be hard. And if she was already local, then it makes sense that's why they ended up there.
It is interesting because, again, like, I watched The Challenge with you, so I know of people coming from the real world. I mean,
now you do. You're missing, like, years of...
Yes. Okay. I'm a much later adopter.
Okay.
But my point is more, it's interesting looking at the, you know, the different walks of life and people that they got for this show feels much more disparate than what I imagine later seasons seem to have been. It seems to have become a little bit more homogenized in terms of the types of, you know what I mean? Like, not necessarily the different walks of life. Like, a med student and a cartoonist, wildly different.
I would assume it was still like that, but I have no idea.
I have no concept, right? But
I mean, I think they still make the show.
Do they really?
I don't know. I assume everyone's just an influencer now. Like, don't they just go, hey, let's put a bunch of YouTubers in a house? Like, yeah, I have no idea.
Kind
of,
because there was Real World and there was, what was the other one that fed into the challenge? Road Rules or whatever show that was?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, Road Rules.
I'm deficient in this area.
Yeah.
I know this book. That's what I know about the Real World.
Well, yeah.
Besides what you would see, again, in, like, a lot of different TV shows, like, I'm pretty sure even Student Body is a childhood favorite of mine. Like, that had a reference to Real World. Like, that was just...
Right.
You know, it was just part of the thing that people talked about, so...
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, hopefully we can find his season. But maybe if not, we could go back and find a different season.
Yeah. And you would recommend it?
The book?
Yeah.
No. Yes, I would recommend, don't read it on the subway, because that seems like a bad plan. Maybe don't read it on a Saturday night as your four-year-old's running around in circles around
you. It's not really a vacation read, maybe. It is heavy.
It's very good. I was kidding when I said no, obviously, in case that didn't come across.
Yes.
I would definitely recommend it. I think it's a great book. I don't know in what context people would randomly pick this up.
True.
Right? But hopefully people who are listening decide to give it a try because we have said to try it. I'm not the most eloquent book reviewer. I'm pretty sure I haven't done this kind of a book report since third grade. Yeah. But I definitely would recommend it. Mm-hmm. It is a good read. It does, as you said, feels very personal, conversational. It's interesting to think back to the time where this was taking place, as you said, because Judd himself talks about he didn't know, he wasn't educated, like he didn't know if it was safe to live with a guy with AIDS or if mm-hmm. how, you know. Yeah. I think he knew he couldn't get it, but he wasn't positive that there wasn't a risk. Like, you know, he does talk about like his own, how naive he might have been. And, you know, they do ask one of the housemates to leave because he's homophobic and mm-hmm. you know, not supportive.
No.
So it's interesting, as you said, to read the book and imagine that time. And I think the fact that it's still impactful to you and I today is amazing, considering that, like mm-hmm. you said, this is a story written 20 years ago about something that happened 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. So definitely it's a good read. I don't know what the context of what kind of mood you should be in to read it.
Yeah.
But definitely a good read. And especially, you know, for people who might enjoy his other work or people who enjoy reality TV or people mm-hmm. who love a story about friendship.
Yeah,
or,
that's true.
You know, if you, there's a couple, you know, nice quotes in there about loss, and about grief. Mm-hmm. You know, I personally lost my cousin, almost a year ago. And, there was a couple of passages in here that definitely made me think of her. Mm. And, so I think it's also a story about, finding the meaning in a life lost too early.
Well said. I'm going to break your nice moment of thought with something.
Good. Shenanigans.
and say, you know, it's telling us a story about something that happened 30 years ago. It's like Marty McFly reading about something from 1955. Like that in terms of...
Why would you say that?
Right? But like that's... Because that's how long ago it's been. Like it's crazy. But it doesn't feel that far away in some ways. But you know, it's a very real story. One thing actually we didn't talk a lot about, but you mentioned it a little bit. The art. Because again, it is a graphic novel.
Right.
You know, there is, he does a great job of cartooning and, you know, really, it's interesting, right? Because he's capturing real people that he knew. Mm-hmm. So he has to get certain sense of likenesses, both for himself and for, you know, the sort of cast of characters.
I feel like it'd be hard to draw yourself.
Right?
You know, when you look in the mirror and you're like, I don't know, like, I feel like it would be hard to, like, hear your own voice.
Mm.
Like, I don't listen to your podcast, sorry, but, like, I assume it's hard sometimes.
You get used to it.
Yeah.
But I guess that's the same thing, right? You would eventually get used to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's very interesting because you want to be expressive. You want to tell a story. You're doing it visually. It's black and white, which is different.
Yeah, I did find that to be a choice.
Did you like it?
I did. I at the risk of getting kicked off the podcast, I don't read a lot of graphic novels.
That's
at
fair.
All.
That's fair.
I can probably count on one or two hands the number I've read. So I think I was definitely more into the story than the art.
Okay.
But I think part of that is that I'm not as used to reading this type of medium.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not a comic person.
Okay.
I don't read graphic novels. So I think I was more focused on the story because generally most of the reading that I do, mm-hmm. I said do, most of the reading that I do, you know, I'm picturing things in my head. I'm using my imagination.
Mm-hmm.
The pictures aren't usually there for me. So I think as much as I was seeing them, I wasn't taking them in completely because I was reading the way I would read a normal novel.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I did a bad job of reading this book, apparently, is what I'm saying.
No.
But I still really enjoyed it. And, you know, flipping through it now.
It is different than a standard.
I do think the art is really well done. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that the art is the takeaway.
Okay.
As much as I think it's well done, I don't think that's...
Yeah. I mean, it didn't get in the way for you. Yeah. It's interesting because it's very different from, like, again, like a big two comic where it's all about... you know, characters yelling at each other, so to speak. You know, like, there's a lot of dialogue balloons. In this, a lot of it is narration,
mm-hmm.
Which makes it probably a little bit easier for you to go into without being as much of a, you know, person who's used to reading comic books as a medium. Because then it's almost like, this sounds stupid, but it's almost like a picture book with kids. Like, you have one page of text, yep. and the other is like a picture, right? And really, it's all about the words, but then you also have this, like, supporting picture, where that's kind of what happens here. Now, there are obviously some parts of it where you have characters actually talking to each other, mm-hmm. and there's dialogue, but that's not the prevalent way of doing it. So it actually is, in some ways, almost more like a prose book in that way. Obviously, the art is still pretty important, and it establishes a lot, but it also makes it a probably easier reading experience if you don't have as much experience with that medium, right. and that vernacular. It's not challenging you in terms of where panel placement is and where you're supposed to draw.
Yeah, I was never lost. Like, where do I go next?
Like, some comics are crazy, and you're like, where am I supposed to, you know, and sometimes it's just because it's poorly constructed.
Yeah, but I did feel it was easy to take it all in.
Hmm.
Like,
yeah.
And so in that sense, the art was a fluid part of the story. Like, it didn't feel...
Never took you out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then
Those are words.
Yeah,
I think the black and white, I like the black and white. This is silly because I know this is not the intention. Mm-hmm. But to me, it was especially nice because it felt like a flashback. Like, this is mm-hmm. something that happened a while ago.
Yeah.
And obviously 20 years ago isn't, you know, black and white. But, you know, in movies and stuff, when we flash mm-hmm. back to old times, it's often done in black and white. So it did feel, you know, to me, the black and white worked really well because it's something that happened a long time ago. And it was a flashback or a memory or, mm-hmm. you know, something that you're, you know, reliving.
Yeah.
So the black and white fit.
I don't think I ever asked Judd about that choice. It might have been just honestly been budgetary. Might have been, like, easier to do, you know, print it in black and white. And not have to then go over
don't
it with,
say that.
With colors. No, I'll ask him at some point.
Say it was an amazing artistic choice.
It is a great artistic
choice.
Everyone
should check it out.
I mean, for a long time, that was definitely a thing that indie comics would be more likely to be black and white. And again, budgetary. I don't know if that's still as much
that's
the case.
That's why Clerks is black and white. I know it's a different medium, but same idea, right?
Actually, that was more of a, because they realized that the lighting in the quick stop was garbage.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it made it look...
But garbage as in, like, the, you know, they can't
they
fix the lighting,
it,
and they had to film mostly at night.
True.
Because they were using a mm-hmm. business that was open during the day. Like, it feels very independent.
True.
Film, you know, so...
Especially at the time, When you see those characters in color, it doesn't seem right.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
You're like, why is Dante in color? I want him in black and white.
Right?
That's
why the others weren't as good.
Oof.
What? They weren't. I didn't say they were bad. I said the first one's the best one.
Okay, here's a question. Where would you rank 2 and 3 of Clerks? Would you put 2?
Liked 3 better than 2.
Okay.
I know I just said I didn't say they were bad, but 2 was bad. I didn't like it.
Okay. But when we watched 3, it did not seem to be, like, loving it either. I thought the ending of it was incredibly emotional when he shows them the movie, but...
So maybe... I'm trying to remember now. I didn't like 2.
Yeah.
And then we watched 3, and I was kind of like,
You were not loving that I made you watch it.
And then I feel like by the end... Like, I think I liked the end, so it kind of, like, brought it back. Like, it ended on a good note.
It saved it a little?
I have seen enough Kevin Smith stuff to know that I enjoy his work.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if Clerks 2 and 3 aren't my favorite.
Yeah.
I still can enjoy.
Yeah.
Sounds like I'm being careful in case he's listening. I'm like, if Kevin Smith is listening, I love you. Those weren't my favorite. I'm more chasing Amy Mallrats,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Now, having read this by Judd Winnick, are you going to read some Hilo now? Very different.
I mean, I'm not going to read a lot of graphic novels in general.
No.
That
probably wouldn't be the one you would go to.
Well, I mean, if I were going to read graphic novels, I could pick up a Hilo.
Yeah.
I know Zach loves it.
Oh, yeah, they're fantastic. A lot. Books. Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, if my husband and my kid recommend something, then I would choose that. But I probably am not going to come over to the dark side anytime soon.
That's fair.
Who's almost five.
Yeah.
You were doing bedtime just now. And as I was leaving the room for you to do story time, I heard her say, "We're going to read my comic book." And I was like, oh. Doing it again.
So we read something else.
He's creating another one.
We read Happy Hippo Angry Duck.
Oh, I like that book.
Me too.
But she was clutching her amazing Spider-Man and his Spidey and his amazing friends comic book.
100%.
Which is fine. It was just, you know, she is very much going to be your daughter, which is great.
I didn't mean for it to happen.
It's fine.
In terms of Judd, he said that the reason why he made Hilo was that he wanted something that his kids could read, because he had done a lot of really good Batman comics and stuff, but they were violent and they were dark and very serious. And you know, his kids love Bone, which was a very fun, lighthearted comic that ran for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so he wanted his version of that. So he's like, "Well, I'll do it myself." And so that's part of how he created Hilo, was something that his kids could read that would be fun. And you know, he does book tours at like at elementary schools, and all the kids kind of come up and ask him about, you know, his characters, and really digs it.
That is really fun. I have a couple books upstairs in one of the kids' rooms that were mine from, you know, an author came to our school, read it, got an autograph. Can't say that I have any particular connection to the story, but I'm like, this is autographed. I saw this author live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a fantastic memory from my childhood that I remember how exciting it was to have an author come and read to us.
Oh, yeah.
And it didn't necessarily matter what the story was. Mm-hmm. That book became amazing because you felt a stronger connection to it from having met the author. So
absolutely.
In no way a writer, nor am I ever going to be, but I would absolutely make children's book if I was like so inclined to write. That's what I would write.
Yeah.
I would do children's books.
There's a sense of connection you can make very quickly with a child, and more immediate gratification too.
Like little kids, not like.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, I get you.
Older kids. No.
Teenagers. No.
Well, I mean, we don't have one of those yet. Thank God. But
not yet. Well, thank you so much for reading Pedro and Me.
Yeah, I'm glad that you did. Thanks for recommending Weird Choice for a book club. I'm not going to lie.
That's fair.
Something
different. Something that's not
a big
definitely.
Two. Definitely. And... I joked that you chose this for me because you knew I'd be like, ooh, the real world.
A little bit.
Very much enjoy reality TV. I love the challenge, so I probably know someone from most of the seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Someone has ended up on the challenge or, you know, in the world, like I know of them.
Yeah.
So I think I was kind of saying that's why you chose it. And then reading it, I mean, I'm glad I read it because I'm not sure that had you just said, "Hey, here's a book, I think you should read it."
Mm.
I'm not sure that I would have. Although I'm telling our listeners that they should go and and pick it up and read it because
that
they will
that is
really
the fun of a book of the book club for me, because I mean the last one that I did with the guys, I had them read like, you know, 70 Spider-Man comics. They'd never read it before. It was impactful. It was the original Spider-Man clone saga that impacted their favorite favorite storylines.
Really?
Yeah. Like 20 years later, they revisited that.
Is this
idea
you just
of the
throwing
clone.
To another episode? You guys should definitely listen to that episode.
Yeah, I don't remember the number off the top of my head.
You're just plugging an episode.
I am. Yeah. But,
yeah, and I'm calling you out on it.
But that was fun because they had never read it before, and Paul especially, like, he's never really read any 70s comics, and he was like, "Oh, this is actually pretty good." I'm like, "Yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed it." So I'm glad you enjoyed this.
I did, very much. I definitely recommend it. I'm not going to diminish its importance by ranking it in any kind of way, definitely I think it's an important story. I think it's very personal, very well done, and I would recommend it. Although if I am back on the podcast for a Book of the Month club, I would like something a little more upbeat.
Did I offer you Archie? I thought I did.
No, I think you said I was going to offer you Archie.
Oh, you might have liked that.
I'm not sure I would have chosen Archie.
No? Like a modern spin on Archie. It's like watching like Riverdale, but without being so serious and like
grim. I haven't seen Riverdale.
Well, okay.
Apparently I only watch Challenge and Grey's Anatomy. That's what I've learned from this podcast.
That's right.
It's not true, but...
And Survivor and, you know, spinoffs of Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, so random tangent or shenanigan, as I like to call it.
Okay.
I have to watch the season two of Traitors just started.
Okay.
And there's some people from the challenge who are originally from the real world.
Okay.
Are on Traitors. Mm. So that's not a reality show that I have watched in the past. But now that there's a lot of people that you would recognize, even like Bananas, CT, and some people from Survivor, Parvati, and Sandra, I think Sandra's on it. Okay. Cast is amazing.
Interesting.
So I think we should watch that as well.
This did remind me, I believe a year or two ago, because I think I did ask Judd about it, they did a reunion of the original Real World cast, so season one.
Oh, you told me this.
And they brought them all back together. I don't remember much else about it, because I think I'd asked him, like, what would you do? Like, would you do that? And I think he was kind of like, no one wants to see, you know, old Judd going around.
Do you know, I mean, obviously he's still married to one of his castmates and another one passed away, but do you know if he's in touch with...
I don't know.
The others?
Oh. Yeah. I don't know if it came up. It might
have. I assume it's one of those lifelong bond type situations.
Yeah. It was
if you didn't share a loss.
That's true. It already would have been like this important moment in time that would be memorable. And then again, the added, everything that happened with Pedro obviously would have made it even more of a experience to have gone through with other people. That's for sure.
Okay. So final question for you.
Yes.
Unrelated to the book.
Okay.
If you had to be on a reality TV show.
Okay.
Which one are you on?
Which one am I on?
Which one are you on?
God, I'd be bad at all of them. I don't know. Deal or Don't, No Deal. That's a game show, not a reality show.
No, not a game show. Yeah, I want like a Survivor, Big Brother.
So I think challenge, I'd be terrible.
Real World.
Yeah. I think I'd be bad at anything like with challenges, though, because I watch these shows, like The Challenge especially. I'd be dead in like 5 minutes. Maybe Survivor? I think I could get along with... A lot of people seem to break down without food. And
you talk a lot.
Who, me?
Yeah, so I feel like you would be... You know when people are like, oh, he played a great social game? Mm-hmm. Like, you'd be the telling stories and giving people trivia and keeping them entertained. And maybe. Like, I do think that you would be good at the social aspect.
Interesting.
If not, I'm not saying you wouldn't be good at the challenges themselves, but I think the social aspect.
Interesting. I think Big Brother, I don't think I could handle that. Because there's too much politicking in a game like that.
Yeah.
Because there's extra levels. It's like, oh, I'm going to eliminate one of these people, and then you can like potentially get them taken down, and then you got to put up...
Back door.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's too much.
The back door has been open. Yeah. But you have to learn catchphrases if you go on these shows. You have to be able to say, my best friend in here.
Oh, yeah.
You have to say ride or die. You have to say throw them under the bus.
Oh, my God.
Like, right. There's a lot of, like...
Good lingo.
Jargon. Yeah.
Jargon
that you need to learn.
It's specific to the industry.
I think that's how they get paid. I don't know. I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's certain phrases that they have to say.
Yeah.
Where they don't get paid.
What would you do? What?
Amazing Race.
Oh, yeah.
Hands down, Amazing Race.
See,
I get to travel. I get to do competitions. Yeah. I get to take someone I like with me.
Yeah. I think...
Spoiler, it's not you.
I know. I think that would be awful.
I love it.
I think I would go with anyone but you.
Rude.
No, because I think...
Rude.
You know one of your favorite things is watching couples bicker?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, not when we're the ones doing it.
No. I don't. That's part of why I said I don't want to bring it.
Yeah, because I feel like I would get in my head about things, and then I think things wouldn't go well. Because I think I would be very, like, stressed about certain of the challenges.
And then I would be like, we're on TV. Can we just fight about this later?
Oh, that would be totally true. Yeah.
Like, so giving you the side eye, like, let's fight later. So
you're right. I think that would be a very good fit for you.
Yeah.
I guess Survivor for me. Big Brother is not for
me. Yeah, no, I'm definitely going to travel and do competitions. And I did that City Chase.
Mm-hmm.
Remember? I did really well.
Yeah.
I won prizes.
That's true.
First all-female team to cross the finish line.
Forgot about that.
Yeah. It was just around Toronto, but same idea.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I'm a city person, so if they send me to a city, like, you know, I'm not getting lost on the subway or whatever.
True. I find for all those shows, though, the people are like...
I'm not shaving my head for $1 million, so I don't care.
Okay, fair.
I mean, I made fun of Rachel for not doing it, but that's fine.
I do think...
I'm not doing it.
Those types of shows, people are so, like, trying to be 18 steps ahead, and... I have very poor memory, as you know. So I feel like that'd be deadly because I'd just be like, I don't remember what I said yesterday. Like, you know, but that could be good and bad. You know.
So maybe we have to find you a different show.
A different show? Yeah.
Like, I mean, you don't cook.
I don't cook.
I mean, it's not like you don't cook, but you don't cook like at an expert level.
No.
But something where like it's more focused on a skill. as opposed to the voting people out.
True. I don't have any skills.
Well, but maybe you could, like, I don't know, you could learn to dress and drag or something. Like, maybe some of these skills could be acquired.
I like how that's the first one you're like.
All I could think of was, like, shows that are a very specific skill, like a cooking show, a baking show.
Yeah.
RuPaul's Drag Race, yeah. America's Next Top Model. I didn't think you qualified for.
No, I don't think so. I'm not American.
Or a model.
Yeah. I can't dance. So I couldn't be on, yeah. like, you know, one of those. I can't sing or dance. What can yeah. I do?
Nothing. You are a very good interviewer.
That, I will take
this
that.
This is where you segue to throw to an interview you did recently with oh, yeah. Bagley.
Oh, yeah. So Mark Bagley was on the show last episode.
Last episode.
1024.
Yeah. So I don't think anyone skipped his no. episode to listen to me talk. But just in case anyone did, definitely go back and listen to that one. That sure. was a bucket list moment for Adam.
It was.
And I'm not going to listen to it, but someone should.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of people have.
So thank you for leading into a nice segue of what's coming up next. Upcoming episodes in the next month and a half will include interviews with Michael Urie, editor of Back Issue Magazine, a conversation with Glenn Greenberg talking about Star Trek Untold Tales, Untold Voyages, I should say, issues 1 to 5 from 1998. We have an interview coming up with Mike Carlin that'll probably actually be next episode, 1026. There will, at some point in February, be a Book of the Month Club as we talk about the Amazing Spider-Man Epic Collection, Life Theft. Kelly, you're invited to join.
Careful, I might come.
Oh my God, that would be amazing.
You guys would hate that.
I would love it.
I mean,
Paul would be like,
your
what's happening?
Listeners would love it because hashtag needs more Kelly.
100%.
But I don't think the boys would like me to join for that.
Nate would love it. I think it's only Paul we'd have to work on.
That sounds like Paul doesn't like me. Paul loves me.
Well, Paul does love you.
Okay.
He's your brother-in-law.
Like, my fam jam.
He's your fam jam. If you want to email us at the show, you can do so at comicshenanigans@gmail.com. You can rate the show on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. Listen to us on Apple Podcasts. It doesn't roll off the tongue. And listen to us on Spotify. Thanks so much for listening. Kelly, any last words?
Hashtag needs more Kelly.
Bye-bye.